public hearings on Capitol Hill. Hearing truth would sure be a thrill. Be here in the spectrum you won't find politicians. Just authors, artists, actors, and musicians. Hiya, on behalf of everyone immersed in the arts and humanities of Western Wisconsin, I extend greetings and a hearty welcome to Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross, and our guest list this week includes the following. Lucas Fisher and Billy Angel are here with details on the 10th Stage Fright tribute to the Last Waltz concert. That's just a couple weeks away. Author and more, Patricia A. Hawkinson, chats with our own Jim Oliver about her new novel that's set in 1930s Eau Claire. Artist and sculptor Terry Myers, working to ship some art abroad for a huge annual exhibit. We'll find out how we can help. And our episode begins right here. Who has not talked about how important it is, especially in times of disharmony and political conflict, to laugh? And maybe laughing at ourselves is exactly what we need, but anyway, finding the humor in things is timely, healthy, and thankfully available. If you find yourself having a tough time uncovering that humor on your own, you can always let someone else do it, and Clearwater Comedy is more than willing to help. Clearwater Comedy looks ahead in a conversation between our own Catherine Thomas and originator Jordan Durow.
And first I'd like to start getting to know Clearwater Comedy a little bit more. Let's go through a quick history.
Yeah, absolutely. It's exciting for us because we're actually, in March of 2020, we'll be marking 5 years of running this thing. We had been doing an open mic here in town for 2-3 years. That had grown. It was alongside musicians, so it wasn't just comedy, but it was at the Plus. That open mic really took off. We had started doing a few intermittent shows throughout the year, just featuring local comics, but nothing with any regularity. And then the owner of the Plus, Benny Haas, invited us to consider taking on a weekly comedy show on Thursday nights. And so we said yes, not really understanding or knowing what we were doing or what exactly we were signing on for. So it was definitely a learning curve. We were lucky to have the feedback of especially Tim Harmston, who we've talked about. He's been a crucial mentor to us. So in those early days when we weren't sure what to ask or offer comedians for pay, things like that, he was able to give us some guidelines to go by so we could pretend to be professionals until now. I don't know if I'd still call us quite professional, seems strong, but we know what we're doing at this point, nearly 5 years in. And yeah, in the last number of years, we've fine-tuned and maybe not a well-oiled machine, but we're clicking on all cylinders now. And I think we got another couple of years in us, which is exciting because when we started early on, had no idea if it would have legs. We didn't know if we'd be around in another month, let alone 5 years. So we're excited to have several hundred shows under our belts and looking ahead to 2020.
Well, congratulations. So Clearwater Comedy, it's focused on stand-up comedy?
Yeah, primarily. We have done a couple of crossover events. There's been a strong improv scene here in Eau Claire, so we try and collaborate as much as we can. We cross over where we can, but our primary focus with Clearwater is indeed stand-up specifically.
And you are a stand-up comedian yourself.
Yes, I presume to be anyway. Yeah, I've been doing stand-up in Eau Claire for about, I guess, 7 years now. Although I will say that 7 years in Eau Claire time is a little different because we only have one open mic, whereas larger cities, they can do 2 or 3 in a night. So it's kind of the difference between human years and dog years. About 7 years in comedy so far.
What an opportunity to learn from the comedians that are local, like you are, and the guests that you get from out of town. We'll be talking about some of those coming up. You meet at the Plus, but I think you've expanded recently to a couple other locations.
Yeah, absolutely. Plus is our home base. That's the site of our weekly show. But since then, we've also added a regular monthly. It's the first Wednesday of every month at Zymergy Brewing. It's a newer brewery in Menominee. So that was our first excursion into Menominee. Previous to that, we had also started doing... It's intermittent, so it's not a set day of the month. It just kind of depends on when comics come through and scheduling and stuff. But we've also been doing shows at By the Willow in Chippewa Falls. So all throughout the Chippewa Valley now, we're putting on shows with regularity. And we've also done a few at the Mabel Tainter in Menominee as well. Nothing scheduled right now for 2020 yet, but we're hoping to revisit that.
How would you describe the local comedy scene in Western Wisconsin? Is there a variety? Could you kind of talk about different styles that we have here?
I think it's actually somewhat remarkable, if I can toot our own horn, just how such a small scene, you would think that things would become homogenized a bit because we're all going to the same mic. We're all talking to each other, helping each other workshop. But that said, I do think the core crew that we have, we would consider members of Clearwater Comedy, 7 to 10 of us right now, I would say. It's all very different. You know, we have a few who are absurdist or one-liner heavy. Other people are more anecdotal stories. You know, a few talk about some social commentary and things like that. Others are more on the silly side of things. So even if for a scene this small, I think it is a pretty wide array of styles, and that's something that I'm proud of. And I think it definitely helps us in terms of staying appealing for locals to come out and seeing different members of Clearwater Comedy hosting or performing on these shows.
Speaking of locals, do you think the Midwest has its own style of comedy? Are there some hallmarks of, quote, Midwestern comedy that you can identify?
Like I said, I think there can be a lot of difference in perspective and style, but there are, as you say, some hallmarks. I would say a big one when you're talking about comedians from the Midwest is weather. There's so much weather-related material done because it is just such a impactful thing for our day-to-day lives. Sports loom large as well. Food is always a big, I mean, maybe that's something everywhere, but you know, you get a lot of casserole material and so I would say that there's some commonalities throughout in terms of Midwest based comedians talk about religion, you know, some good Lutheran jokes. When we just had Mary Mack in last Saturday, and I think if you're going to talk about Midwest humor, you definitely have to bring her name up. She hits all those marks, and she'd be a great example of what that looks like. I think it can be pretty diverse, but still there are those hallmarks, I think, that we share in common living in the Midwest.
We're talking with Jordan Durow, one of the founders of Clearwater Comedy here in Eau Claire, and I think we're going to move the conversation now to look at some upcoming shows that you'll be hosting, including some big-name comedians that are from out of town. My first question is, how do you attract nationally well-known comedians to Eau Claire?
Well, one of the things we benefit from is the same thing that made the Joint a happening place when they were having jazz shows, which is just our proximity to the Twin Cities. And between Chicago, we're able to catch a lot of these comedians as they're traveling in between dates. We're able to offer them, fill a date on a Tuesday or a Wednesday where they otherwise might not be able to when they're traveling. So they're in the area, they're driving through, and we can offer them a room that at this point now has a good reputation. Other comics management companies have worked with us and had good experiences. So it's convenient for them. It's a good offer. It's a good chance for them to get a show on a night they otherwise might not, and we're in good standing. So at this point, that's kind of our bread and butter for these bigger acts, is catching them as they're on tour, bringing them in, not on a Friday or Saturday, but a Tuesday or Wednesday in between these bigger cities.
Next Wednesday, November 20th, you'll have one of those bigger acts. Hari Kondabolu is coming to Clearwater Comedy, and it's funny that of the timing, because just today I was on the WPR website and I saw a featured article interviewing Hari Kondabolu for WPR's show Beta that's on the weekend. So that's pretty cool. He's making the rounds and in Wisconsin and in public radio. So I bet we have some Hari Kondabolu fans in our audience. I know you're really excited about having him come.
Yeah, first off, it's our very first time having him through. He's somebody who's been on our short list for a number of years, so finally getting to bring him to Eau Claire audiences is an exciting thing. Certainly made his rounds on public radio. He's also been on Fresh Air, and All Things Considered, so some listeners may know him from his radio appearances. But additionally, he's also been seen on pretty much every late-night show, Conan, Kimmel, etc., in addition to that, last year, 2018, he had a Netflix special called Warn Your Relatives. So he's a pedigree and a body of work that is highly enviable, pretty amazing stuff. And so getting someone of that level of acclaim and success is pretty exciting for us.
I was looking at some of his background information, and he's a really well-educated guy. New York City, he went to the London School of Economics, so he's got to bring a certain, I don't know, how would you describe his style?
He's very, very intelligent. In addition to that, he is the son of Indian immigrants who moved to New York City. That's where he was born. He talks about social issues from that perspective. He has a lot of insight to bring from that background, talking about, you know, very relevant things in 2019. We're excited to have somebody who can speak to many different issues that are on our minds with not only such intelligence, but of course, humor at the bottom line. He's able to do all those things and tie it together with humor and make you laugh while you're also thinking and stewing on these things.
So Hari Kondabolu here in Eau Claire, Wednesday, November 20th. I think that show's at 8 o'clock at the Plus.
Correct. Doors 7:30, show at 8.
Excellent. And then later on in December, a couple more headliners. Sean Patton will be here December 2nd. That's a Monday, also at 8 o'clock. And then Michael Palasak towards the end of the month, Saturday, December 28th.
Sean Patton, looping back to one of the things you asked me earlier, how we get some of these comics. A big part of that is Sean. We had him early on. We hit it off with him. We became friends, and he's one of those comics who knows every other comic. He's a lot of comics' favorite comic. So once we had him giving good word of mouth and vouching for our room to other comedians, it opened a lot of doors for us. Needless to say, we owe him a debt of gratitude. We're big fans of his. And beyond help he's given us, he's also just one of the absolute funniest. I think every time I've seen him, I've laughed so hard that my face hurt, my ribs hurt. I'm not exaggerating. He's just one of the absolute funniest comedians I've ever seen. I think he's been through Eau Claire 3 or 4 times now, and every single time he's walked off stage to a standing ovation, which is pretty rare. Not a lot of comics can say that. He'll be an interesting juxtaposition to Hari because it's hard to tell where his prepared material begins and his riffing ends because he's just so naturally funny and so much is off the cuff. It's freewheeling. And then Michael Palasak, he's from Chicago, so he's always back in the extended area for the holidays. This will be the third year in a row that we've gotten him in that stretch between Christmas and New Year. So he's kind of become our end-of-the-year comic. One reason being that he works pretty much clean. It's one of the few shows I can invite my parents to, which is nice. So it's a fun thing. If you got family or people around for the holidays, you can bring them down to a comedy show. Keep this tradition going into the next couple of years. Close out every year hanging out with Michael Palasak.
Clearwater Comedy has a Facebook page. That Facebook page has more information about upcoming shows, including those that we talked about, and how you can buy tickets. And I have been talking with Jordan Durow, who's one of the co-founders of Clearwater Comedy and a comedian himself. Jordan, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Well, there you have it. No excuses for not finding humor in corners of your world. Thanks, Catherine. Down the road on Spectrum West, it's the year to celebrate the anniversary of the band's farewell concert. Believe me, Jim Oliver read a good book. And more on Spectrum West. Support for WPR comes from Charter Bank of Eau Claire, offering the mobile app that provides access 24/7 to view balances, pay bills, and more. Available on iPhone, iPad, and Android. More is at charterbank.bank. Support also comes from Art Z Gallery in Amory, presenting Splendor of Imagination, featuring pottery by Wynne Herberg and paintings by Cheryl Manwiller and Jan Killian. More information available at artzgallery.org. Earlier in 2019, we learned of a special delivery to artist Eric Lee inviting him to come to Italy with some of his work, part of an annual worldwide exhibit at the European Cultural Center in Venice. With generous help from friends, he raised the funds necessary to take a trip of a lifetime. Well, folks, we're two for two. Artist and sculptor Terry Meyer received an invitation, and a similar process is underway. The exhibit begins in late May, and Terry took some time off from working on the sculpting that caught their attention. to stop by the studio. First of all, some background on you, my friend.
Okay.
You are well known to many, but for those not in that brotherhood, let's do what we can on the radio to explain your art. You have a thing, I think, for horses and sailing ships. I'm sure there's a lot more.
Well, there is. I've been doing artwork since I was a little kid.
Did you draw horses more true to life at first before you got into the more abstracty looking horses?
Especially when I was young. All those kind of things get drawn more specific when you're young because you're always trying to mimic what you see. And I think as you mature or as your ideas for art or your environment grow or change, so does the art. And in my case, it got a little more abstract. It got a little more colorful.
Did any mentor or anything encourage you to get more courageous that way?
I can't think of anyone in particular. I mean, my favorite artist is John Singer Sargent. And then there's actually a guy on Instagram that I watch.
Oh, yeah?
Carlos Delgado that paints fast, and he's real colorful. And he paints just faces, which is kind of interesting because I paint just horses or sailboats mostly. Watching people like that makes me see that I can change even at this point.
How about art education? So, educated in the craft?
I'm self-taught.
You are? Okay.
So, and people that I've known along the way have early on taught me to foreshorten when I didn't know what that was even.
I don't know what that is.
Yeah,
don't,
well, that's where I point
like
at
that.
You.
Oh, I see.
And it looks like my arm is this long
instead
of the full length. So,
whoa. You can do that?
I can do that.
I can do it with stick people.
That's good, Al.
So how about, so what point in your artistic career, because you're noted for oils, watercolor, and sculpture. If you're self-taught, you didn't have anybody encouraging you to do this or that or go out on a limb or be more brave, as I said earlier. So how did you, and this makes my curiosity rise even further without the education in art, how did you pick those things? Did you just find that those were the media that you liked to work with the most?
I have to say when I was like a teenager and into my early 20s, I was trying all sorts of different things. And so anything that came to mind, I would try to do. I would build sculptures. I would paint. I would put sticks together to make things into a shape. And then people that I knew that were artists taught me, here's one style and here's another style.
Sure.
And a friend of mine taught me how to weld. Then I took a class in welding.
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah. So, you know, middle 20s, I'm learning how to weld, figuring out how to build sculptures with that I could afford in those days. I couldn't afford to buy gas, hardly.
The whole sculpture thing for me is kind of new. I didn't realize you did that until this, what we're here to talk about, came up, and we'll get to that in a moment. So your website lists, as I said, oils, watercolor, and sculpture. I was going to ask if there was an order of importance, but here's a better one. How do you choose which one you're going to do today? Do you say, oh, you know what, I think I'm getting tired of oils. I'm going to do some watercolor. How do you switch?
Pretty much just like
that. Just like that?
Okay. Yeah. I might think a couple days ahead of time, but
okay, sure.
Especially now that I'm working on a sculpture for Italy, I have to give myself time because when you're welding, you know, when I'm welding on this thing,
yes,
I have to have a length of time when I can sit, look at the sculpture, weld some parts, sit and look at it, weld some parts so that it grows. And it grows a little different each day depending on, I suppose, how I feel that day or something. But I have the general sculpture. I have a model made. I started out by at least trying to stay close to what my model was that they accepted in Italy. And so now I've reached the point where I finished the part where I can copy it, the base part, and now comes the sort of intuitive, this goes here and that goes there, and you know, how to build the structure so that it's balanced and beautiful and that kind of thing.
You've been talking about the sculpture, and we'll get to what that is in a moment after I remind people Terry Meyer is in the studio with us. He's an artist. You know him. You've seen his stuff. He's co-proprietor also of 200 Main. That's a gallery in downtown Eau Claire. He's been invited to participate and exhibit in the Time Space Existence exhibit at the European Cultural Center, that is in Venice, Italy. It begins in late May and runs through late November of 2020. All right. The sculpture, go figure, a horse.
Yes.
You don't just do horses just standing there. You do horses doing something. What's this horse supposedly doing?
Well, is he just this horse.
It has a title, right?
Yes, it does. From the Earth into Time.
Okay.
And so it goes with the time-space-existence theme of their exhibition. It is a horse coming up out of the ground.
Hmm.
The base is rock, and it's all steel, so it's not really rock, but to represent the rock.
Yes.
And coming out of the dirt, and it'll have some burlap on the base as well. And then it emerges into wire lines that are welded together to form the rest of the horse, which eventually turns into a silver, which represents time, with lines coming out of it, different planes.
So. Now, there is a cool short video on your website showing how you go about sculpting this way, using metal and a welding torch.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to say, did you have to take a welding course? You already answered that question. You did. In order to stand up and support itself, a metal sculpture must be somewhat like building a bridge. How do you go about engineering something like this? Or do you just think you have a center of gravity and then stay on it?
Well, you build armatures. They're like the girders for a building. They're the strong support pieces that, in this instance, go up the spine, go out the legs, and support it to the base, which is a heavy piece of steel.
It has to be balanced as
you
go.
Yes, it does.
Because this is, what, 8 feet tall?
Yeah, 8 feet by about 6.5 feet by about 4.5 feet.
So if it has a wide enough base, it should be okay.
Right? Yep. You know, it sort of spreads out on the bottom so that
it
gets thinner as you go up.
All right.
Yeah, balance is both visually and structurally is important.
I would think shipping is going to be a little bit of a big-time operation here.
Well, we think it is. I haven't been able to get an exact quote yet. Mm. Nobody will tell me until I actually have it built and measured and weighed. But we're expecting it to be pretty expensive.
I would guess. Figuring out how it's going, I mean, by ship. Probably by ship.
Well,
it's big enough, right?
I think probably it'll go by ship. I haven't made the arrangements for that yet.
Hmm.
That's the next thing on my list.
Are there companies who'd box it up, send
it
and everything else?
I'll just box it up myself. I can build a crate.
So then if it screws up, it's on you.
That's right.
If it gets there in pieces. So
yeah,
there's
well,
a
it's steel, so I'm not too worried about it.
That's going to take a lot of bubble wrap.
Yeah. Yeah, as long as you tie the horse down when it's in the box, it's fine.
See, I talk about imagining things. That part I can't.
Yeah, I know it.
I can't imagine. Going to Italy is expensive. Shipping, we've already established, is expensive. And you have a fundraising campaign going on. It wasn't long ago we were on the air with Eric Lee, the wonderful and benevolent people of Western Wisconsin sent him there. And I know you're well on your way to raising funds to do that. Tell us how we can participate.
Well, first of all, what you said is true. The shipping is expensive, but just the place, the piece, exhibition is $15,000. As you said, I've been doing some fundraising, and we've done it a couple of different ways, selling paintings.
So what's the total that
straight
you need?
I'm working towards $30,000.
Okay. First, of which half is entry,
of which half is entry, yep.
And shipping
and
will
I figure that shipping's going to be pretty close to the second half of that. Yeah. It's a big box.
It is a big box, yes.
Big box and heavy one. So we've done it with, people going on my GoFundMe site. Contributions range, just like with every kind of campaign there is, from $10 to $3,000. And I have an anonymous donor who is willing to match the first half of my $15,000 with some money, too. So that's going to be real helpful.
Well, good for you.
And that's I've exciting. Applied for a couple grants. We're going to do a fundraising dinner. I'm doing a painting a day that I'm selling on my Facebook page that you can see every morning at 9 o'clock.
Terry Meyer du jour, folks.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, you've been around the block a few times, and yet you're a bit giddy about this opportunity. I'm guessing it's a combination of what? The big stage plus a European experience and maybe never having thought you would attain this kind of level of acceptance?
Yeah. I mean, it's a real honor to get asked to show my piece in Italy. There's only going to be 40 sculptures in this exhibition.
It's worldwide, folks.
It is, yeah. And so, you know, when I got the invitation, first you think it's a hoax because who's going to find Terry Meyer? Yeah, from Eric.
That's right, yeah.
So, and Eric, as a matter of fact, was the guy who made me feel comfortable about the invitation.
Oh, good.
It's the same group.
And this is a very, very, very prestigious thing. I mean, the European Cultural Center, if you go online and take a look at their stuff, I mean, this isn't small potatoes. All one would have to do is talk to Eric about his trip.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you can go to their website. You can see the European Cultural Center in Italy, and you can actually take virtual tours through the buildings from past shows to see what kind of things they've shown. So,
what is it called? It's called the what? Biennale?
Well, the Biennale runs at the same time, and the European Cultural Center has been an adjunct to that in parallel with them. The Biennale actually invites people, and they don't have to pay for their work to be in it. But as artists, we're pretty used to doing shows on weekends and things like that, where we pay for booths with no guarantee of money anyway.
Oh, Well, almost every competition nowadays that you enter, you have to pay to enter.
Sure, yeah.
You know. I'm wondering what the overall benefits are. First of all, you make new friends. You're over there. You have a fine time, and you make new friends. You must gain new fans of your work. I mean, and it's on a worldwide scale because people come from all over to this thing.
Yeah. The ECC's got their own mailing list where they invite special people for two nights prior to the official opening of the show to come and see the work before anyone else does.
Wow.
If I could sell it to somebody in Europe and then maybe stay over there for a while and make a couple more.
How do we participate in GoFundMe? For people who have never gone to a GoFundMe page.
Sure. There's two ways you can do that. First, you could go to GoFundMe and find Terry Meyer Goes to Italy.
Okay.
An easier way to do that, actually, is just go to terrymeyerfineart.com. That's my webpage. And there's buttons that you can just click that will link you to the GoFundMe page. It's as easy as that. Any size contribution. I mean, this is about the arts community. I mean, obviously, I'm the guy that gets to go.
Yes.
But when I go there, I go as an artist from Eau Claire and an artist from Western Wisconsin. And that's pretty important. I believe in all the arts, you know, visual and theater and music. You know, they're the heart and soul of a community. And so when I go over there, I take Eau Claire with me. And,
we'll be there waving it.
Well, you should come over there with me.
Okay. How easy was that? You should actually take the same ship that your sculpture goes on. Create yourself up with.
It might be cheaper.
We should point out, too, that, you know, there are some perks that go along with certain levels of contribution.
Yes.
And those are listed on your website as well?
Yeah, they're on the website. Anyone who contributes gets something. I'm going to be doing a poster. Everybody gets something.
So, you're generous in return.
I hope to be.
TerryMeyerFineArt.com is the website, folks. Good stuff.
Thank you.
Ciao.
Well, ciao. Thanks, Al.
Good luck. This is Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Al Ross. Spectrum memo for you. Friday night, Sue Orfield presents the Barley Jacks at the Mabel Tainter in Menominee. The Eau Claire Chamber Orchestra presents Saturday evening. Guess when? Saturday evening. The music of Mozart and Holst featuring pianist Nicholas Phillips, Gene Colas on flute, and Steve Maiala on oboe. Tickets at PabloCenter.org. Well, I'll tell you what, put a book in front of him or on his electric library, and chances are Jim Oliver will share it with us when he's finished. Well, this time the author lives just down the street.
Working from Studio 8 at Artisan Forge Studios, Expressive Domain, Patricia Hawkinson is a multifaceted artist. She creates stained glass kaleidoscopes, stained glass jewelry, and tapestry handbags, among other things. She is also a published author with hundreds of poems posted online in her blog and in numerous international anthologies, including the Writer's Digest. Anne has published Magnetic Repulsion, 100 Poems from Desire to Disgust. She's created an adult coloring book, Color Eau Claire, and released a collaborative new coloring book, Chequamegon Bay, co-illustrated by Jeffrey Holvick. Her most recent offering is a novel, Born with a Tarnished Spoon, being released almost as we speak by Outskirts Press. Patricia Hawkinson is in the studio to talk about Born with a Tarnished Spoon and perhaps some of her other artistic pursuits that we can squeeze in. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me here.
How did you manage to work in all the other activities around writing a book?
You know, each day if you just do something that gives purpose to the day, you do another thing the next day and another thing the next day, and before you know it, you have a studio filled with sewing items, crochets, jewelry, colored pencils, paintings. It all just adds up.
You are a retired English teacher, is that right?
Yes, I am.
Well, that always scares me because I am married to an English lit major who is constantly correcting my usage of words and a lot of other things. So I'll try to muddle through here as best I can. One thing that she's really gotten hooked on is adult coloring books.
I was involved in a drawing group here in Eau Claire called Draw Eau Claire, small group of people who enjoyed sketching. And I had posted a few of my illustrations on Facebook. There was a restaurant opening, and they had asked me to do some paintings of some parks in our community. And I had so much fun doing those parks, I just kept sketching and drawing more parks. And by the time I had eight, I thought, well, I'm going to move on to other iconic places in Eau Claire, and I sketched City Hall and the library and the bank and so forth, and got to 40 pictures, and I thought I could pull this together and create it into a coloring book for other people to enjoy.
Mm-hmm. The main character in Born with a Tarnished Spoon is a girl named Cassie Clark. Tell us about her.
Cassie Clark was my creation of a young girl that was a lumber baron's daughter, high in that social stratus, and someone who could go around Eau Claire with her head held high, and that other people might say, wow, you know, she has a really great life. This is in the 1930s during the Great Depression.
Mm-hmm. Where did the title Born with a Tarnished Spoon come from?
Actually, I had started calling the draft Baby Road because the story does take a turn as the father gets caught up in the illegal baby trade that happened in the 30s. Mm-hmm. And my daughter said, Mom, I think it might be more interesting if you called it Born with a Tarnished Spoon because of the idea that the main character was wealthy and had other people might say she'd been born with a silver spoon in her mouth. And because of the problems that occurred to her, she's kind of got a little tarnish on her. So,
You said it was set in the Depression. What caused you to get interested in the Depression? What was the impetus for
that?
Well,
it wasn't the Depression at first that got me interested, but as a school teacher, when I was teaching fourth grade many, many years ago, I would take my fourth grade students to Carson Park's Sunnyview Schoolhouse, and we would dress up and imagine ourselves in that time frame, and the students enjoyed it so much. And during that time, Eau Claire students, the fourth graders, were always studying the history of their city. And as their teacher, it was up to me to make sure I knew as much about the city as I could. So I had to go out and research and learn about our community, and the lumber industry was an important part of that. Some of the history, such as where the Indian trails were in town, were fascinating to the students. That the fact that we had trolley cars, that was exciting to them, and I had fun sharing that information with them, and it just caught me by surprise myself as to how much interest I was developing.
Part of the book that talked about when the streetcars were taken out of service and all of a sudden they had buses. So.
Yes.
Sounds like there was a lot of research that went into the book. How did you go about researching the book?
Well, I did start at the museum, and they let me into the library archives there, and I found plat books that showed the city maps from the early times, and I kind of settled into the high school yearbooks from old Eau Claire High, and I found 1930s and 31s fascinating.
You have another book coming out pretty soon, do you?
I do. Not probably till next fall is my goal line, but it is going to be about a similar historical fiction book. But instead of one main character, I'm trying to stretch my writing ability a little bit more to try to maneuver through a group of five women and how they affected their community during the 1880s in the Shawamigan Bay area.
Mm-hmm. You came from up in that neck of the
woods.
Yes,
I grew up in Washburn, graduated in 1975, so I'm aging myself.
I graduated a long time before that. I was going to ask you about the other researching that you did.
A good portion of it came from actual Eau Claire newspapers from the 1930s. Mm-hmm. And I did connect with the Leader Telegram to ask permission for doing that. Mm-hmm. And also at the Eau Claire Public Library, which had the newspapers on microfiche. That was just so fun to go through.
We haven't talked about your poetry. You seem to do a lot of poetry.
I do. If you did take the time to look up my poetry blog, I have over 400 poems that I've written. Mm-hmm. I started pretty much about 2009, mm-hmm. and in 2010, I connected with an online group through Writer's Digest. It just kind of exploded from there. They just always encouraged me, and I took part in many different challenges. And from that, I was published in many anthologies.
Now, you said something about a writer's group.
The local writer's group that was kind of helping me get Born with a Tarnished Spoon pulled together was called the Write Club. And Amy Johnson was a young gal that was keeping that group alive. Mm-hmm. It's still functioning here. They challenge you to write a novel in 1 month. And it's always in November. I did actually write the draft for this book in that time frame. But it took 7 years of life getting in the way and other projects such as getting my artwork started. When I finally had some of those other projects underway and done, I could go back to the novel draft and pull it together with some guidance from, beta readers and my sister and my daughter that helped do some of the basic editing.
How far along are you in the new book? You said next year?
I have about 11,000 words in. However, I'm sure I'm going to be rearranging those. I really just started a few days ago as this new month of November challenge started. But I've been mulling the idea, pulling together pictures, as motivation. I have to immerse myself in the 1880s time frame to understand, the language of the people, what clothing they would have, different occupations the characters would have, just the different day-to-day life of someone in the 1880s.
Yeah. Well, getting back to the book and the Depression, were you able to talk to anybody who actually lived during the Depression?
Quite a few people. Uh-huh. That's always a struggle when you're writing historical fiction, especially when you did not live in that time frame yourself. I only can get a guessing of what I think that time frame was like. Mm-hmm. And I get that by, trying to gather as much information I can. And certainly first-hand information is always the richest. That person really was there. For instance, in this book, when I talk about different events that happened, I'm not writing about anybody's real grandmother or uncle that lived during that time. I'm not telling their story. Mm-hmm. I'm telling a fictitious story that my character, Cassie, would have lived through. For instance, if there was someone who, in their desperation, committed suicide in real life in the 30s, and that was in the newspaper, I created a similar event of that type in my story.
I was born at the end of the Depression, giving away my age here shamelessly. My parents, both of them came from farms. They said they were going to farm because then they'd know they had something to eat. You kind of touch on that a little bit in the book, particularly the layoff at the lumber yard. It was a trip through memory lane for me to read the book. Well, I'll shut up and say that we've been talking to Patricia Hawkinson, author of Born with a Tarnished Spoon. Where's the book available?
The book will be available at Artisan Forge Studios and then hopefully at Volume 1 and other local establishments that are interested in carrying the book.
Mm-hmm. And you're also on Amazon and
Barnes and Noble.
Okay,
yes.
Fine. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank
Best wishes
you.
On the book.
I appreciate it so much.
As do we, Mr. Oliver. Thank you. Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio, where support for WPR comes from Schola Cantorum. with sacred Renaissance vocal music at St. Raymond Parish in Fall Creek Friday at 7:30 and at St. Olaf Catholic Church in Eau Claire Sunday at 2 p.m. ScolaEC.org. Support also comes from Wisconsin Credit Union, offering express loans, personal loans for ATVs, snowmobiles, and other recreational vehicles. More information is available at wisconsincu.org. That, of course, is The Band. They rose to fame in the late 60s and 70s, utilizing one of the most unpretentious names in the history of rock and roll. And they are the source of one of rock history's best consistent commemorations, memorializing their 1976 farewell concert, from which the Last Waltz documentary film was made. Billy Angel and Lucas Fisher are members of Rhythm Posse, a regional band who have done their part in putting on an Eau Claire celebration for the last 9 years. They're getting ready for number 10. There are folks who have never heard of The Last Waltz. Let's remind them what The Last Waltz was, where everything that we're going to talk about got its start. Who wants to take on that task?
I'll go. The Last Waltz.
This is Billy, by the way.
This is Billy. The Last Waltz was a movie by Martin Scorsese that chronicled the last concert ever done by the band, The Band. They had all kinds of guest stars, and they all came out, and they just had this huge celebration for their last concert. They had it on Thanksgiving. They had a big Thanksgiving dinner. Then there was ballroom dancing after that, and then this concert. Scorsese filmed it all and made it into what most people consider to be the greatest concert film of all time.
I didn't realize they had, you know, they served 5,000 turkey dinners that
yes.
day.
Yes. Wow.
And it started at 5 o'clock. The ballroom dancing had music by the Berkeley Promenade Orchestra, and they had poets giving readings.
Ferlinghetti and
Michael McClure. Both of those made it into the movie.
Diane DePrima, Robert Duncan, and Freewheelin' Frank. They all gave readings, too.
Freewheelin' Frank.
No relation to freeloading Frank. Okay, just so you know. And the band started its concert at around 9 p.m., opening up with what song?
Cripple Creek.
Yep.
Confusing thing is in the movie they start out
with Don't Do It.
With Don't Do It, which was the last song. It was their encore.
That seems weird.
Yeah.
But maybe the crowd was real jacked up by then. Yeah, one of the greatest documentary concert films ever made. The lineup, as it's listed officially, says Ronnie Hawkins and Bob Dylan, as well as Paul Butterfield, Bobby Charles, Eric Clapton, Neil Diamond, Dr. John, Joni Mitchell, Van Morrison, Ringo Starr, Muddy Waters, Ronnie Wood, and Neil Young.
And Stephen Stills was there.
Oh.
I don't think he's in the movie, is he?
No, he's not. He only played during one of the jams at the end of it. It's on the albums. That's why for the first couple of years we did this show, I listed Stephen Stills right. on the poster and put somebody down who I knew wouldn't be showing up.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what were you doing in 1976?
I was just getting out of the sixth grade.
And Luke, we won't even ask you.
Fair enough.
That's a waste of time.
Yeah.
You know, I don't remember what I was doing in 76, because I tell people I don't remember the whole decade of that.
Sure.
So again, that took place on Thanksgiving Day of 1976. How soon, and maybe you guys don't know this, but how soon after that did this become so iconic? Because the film I read wasn't released until 2 years later, 1978.
Right. Mm-hmm.
How soon after that did people say, we got to recreate this every year? Is that a recent phenomenon? But you got, can't be too recent. You have 10 years under your belt
now.
We
have 10, and when we started doing it, Al, I came up with the idea. I stole it from this group in Minneapolis that does it at the Caboose.
Borrowed it. Let's say
right.
Borrowed.
Well, borrowed. Okay. And they had been doing it for 4 or 5 years before we started. And I don't know how often, how many others.
Have you read about others around the country that have done these
There's
things?
A theater group in Ireland that does it.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. In fact, just this last year, there was a supergroup that did.
They're doing that again this year.
Are they? Okay.
Warren Haynes is leading with Don Was and Dave Malone from the Radiators. Robbie Robertson is producing it this year.
Okay.
And they're doing a mini tour of the East Coast with it.
Hmm.
I know there's a group out in Denver that does it all the time.
You'd have to think that somebody in San Francisco would do it.
Oh, I would think so. La Crosse has done it a couple times.
Uh-huh.
So it's really a popular thing.
It's nice for the guest stuff, you know. A lot of the other concerts and whatnot don't feature so many different people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you guys do. You take the time.
And this is going to be our 10th year. I counted it up a couple weeks ago.
Uh-oh.
Over the 10 years, or the last nine, we've had 151 unique musicians be a part of this show. That's a lot of people.
Wow, that is a lot of people. In the studio with Billy Angel and Lucas Fisher. The show is called Stage Fright, the 10th time we're calling it that. It's a tribute to The Last Waltz, and it's Wednesday, the 27th of November. Begins at...
Doors are going to open at 6. First opening act goes on, it's either 7 or 7:30.
And this is at the Metro in downtown Eau Claire. Billy, you said over 150 musicians in the course of 10 years. What has been the process of picking musicians? I would guess after you did this a year or two, you had people coming to you saying, I want to play this person or I want to play that. Or did it happen that way?
Sometimes it happens that way. We sit down for, gosh, seems like months, and discuss who we think would be good to be a certain part.
Who's we sits down?
Usually Luke, I, and our band, the Rhythm Posse.
Okay.
We're the core band for this thing.
Okay.
We like to try to get bands who are new to the area or just up and coming. However, Al, for this year, we did a poll. We asked all the people who've been to the show before, who would you like to see return for the 10th year? So this is actually kind of a fan favorite best of.
Good. And you've got a wonderful...
Some amazing, amazing things that are going to be happening.
So you don't have new people this year?
We have a couple new ones that are joining with some bands that are performing full.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But all the people doing the songs themselves have been in before.
Okay. So the Rhythm Posse, you're the hosts, for lack of a better term. Has it been that way for 10 years?
The very first year... It was a different configuration.
Okay. But it's always been hosted by
a
band, kind of.
The first 2 years...
I'm reading your face there, Luke.
The first 2 years was Billy Angel Presents, and then after that second year was when we formed the Rhythm Posse.
So he lost his ego after 2 years.
Yeah, exactly.
He didn't have to have it that way.
Year three and forward was Rhythm Posse Presents.
Mm-hmm.
We should bring up this year's event would be a good time to finally get up off your best intentions and go if you've heard about this for 10 years, because it's not coming back next year, I heard.
Well, it's just been so...
We understand.
It's been a good run, and it's 10 years, so we're kind of ready for a new show.
Okay.
So we are planning on putting something together next year. We're not sure what. Discussions have leaned towards maybe Little Feet doing their live concert Waiting for Columbus.
Okay. How do you feel about that? The way you shrugged your shoulders, I can see that it's kind of about time.
It's both a relief, Al, and also pretty scary, because we've built up a name, and we're comfortable with doing what we're doing, and now we're looking at redoing everything and trying to get people interested in that.
I saw somewhere where the word hiatus was written. Now, hiatus means it's not totally going away. You could do it again somewhere down the line.
We could do 5 years of a different show, then come back with it.
Because it was so much fun.
It
included.
Absolutely is.
So, all right, if you're thinking of other configurations, you must be, because it's been so much fun this way, thinking of including other people.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So it's always going to be kind of a Woodstocky thing.
Well, and that's the hard thing, too, because like I was saying, there's not that many other popular concerts that feature so many different musicians. The concert from Bangladesh, a couple other ones, but there's not really a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And to just have one band hosting a bunch of different bands is, like I said, more rare.
All right. Before we leave them thinking that this is just a bunch of people wanting to have a great old time, there is a really nice fundraising aspect to this. So let's get that in.
Certainly. We're charging $10 at the door, and all proceeds are going directly to Bolton Refuge. They are making a presence there. They're going to be running the door, collecting the money. They're going to be giving a little talk about what it is they do and why they're so important, and we're very happy to be supporting them.
There has been a charitable aspect every year. Yeah,
yes.
Every year.
Bolton Refuge is our third charitable. We started with Feed My People, and then we worked with Community Table for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Now Bolton.
Do you envision anything you doing in the future of this nature would be going to a charitable group of some kind?
And the reason being, and this sounds terrible to say, but when you have that many musicians, it's hard to figure out how you pay everybody and who gets what. And rather than give everybody a couple bucks here, a couple bucks there, it's better for us as a community to do something for our community.
Sure, sure, sure.
It's also timely with it being Thanksgiving.
Right.
Yes. You know.
It says something for the people who are involved in music that they are so willing to do this every year.
Sure.
With that umbrella over the top of it saying, sure, I want to be part of this. You have over 40 musicians this year?
Yes. Mm. Yes, it's our biggest one.
As well, it should be.
Right.
10th year. Are we going to be able to buy a 10-year T-shirt? What are we going to have?
No, but we do have some fabulous posters that will be available.
Ah.
They're pretty cool. They are a conglomeration of pictures from the last 10 years.
Ooh. Yeah, are you guys going to sign them?
We did the first year.
Yeah, I was thinking about doing that at the practice, have everybody sign a couple of them. And
that's a good idea.
Auction some off.
Nice touch.
Yeah,
I think so. Nice run, actually.
Yes, thank you.
Nice job, yeah. Billy Angel and Lucas Fisher, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Al.
Wednesday, November 27th, the Metro, downtown Eau Claire. Some quick Spectrum memos. Writers Read holds an open mic at the L.A. Phillips Library in Eau Claire this evening at 6 p.m. Let's see, what else? Saturday evening, the Menominee Singers kick off a 30th season at First Presbyterian Church in Chippewa Falls. Then Sunday afternoon, Our Savior's Lutheran Church in Menominee. Flambeau Valley Arts presents the Missoula Children's Theater production of The Snow Queen. That's Saturday, two shows, 4 and 7 p.m. in the Ladysmith High School Auditorium. That's good stuff. Well, coming up next week, a great book for the whole family as they gather around the table during the holidays and all year round, as a matter of fact. We'll have a warm-up for the big symphony Christmas stroll. We're going to sample the music and talk to the guys, well, a couple people, Big Little Lions. That's good music. Hey, thanks to Kate and Dean for efforts behind the scenes. Thank you guys for giving us so many reasons to do this each week. Keep in touch on Facebook and via email, spectrumwest@wpr.org. For Catherine Thomas and Jim Oliver, I'm Al Ross. See ya.